Okay, first of all, you know, I also need to thank you first. So thank you for this invitation. Thank you for organizing this place. Thank you for everybody whose work I have been aware of. And thank you for all those whose work has been invisible for me. First of all, I was very happy and honored to get this invitation because I have for a long time struggled to liberate myself from my original field, which is the anthropology of religion, ethics, and morality, and to get more grounding in fields like mobility, migration, aspiration, economy, that interestingly the issue of ethics led me to. At the same time, it makes me feel like a total dilettante coming as a discussant without knowing so much of mobility theory. But it also was interesting because I have the background in a field where I would say which has so much of its inspiration from Foucault, so much of its inspiration from discussing powerful discourses, the structures that make it possible for humans to have certain attitudes, and come to this conference, which immediately takes a start with a very phenomenological note into the experience and bodily presence of being in the move, and realize that that which for me in the anthropology of ethics was a counter-hegemonic point against a Foucauldian hegemony, here is a sort of normal way to think, which I was very happy about, but a little while later, a sort of Foucauldian demon started lurking into my mind and knocking and say, what about the constitution of mobile subjects? And indeed, in the course of the day, 2 days, there actually came quite a good balance. And balance between the experiential, embodied, practical side and the whole infrastructure, if you want to put it. Infrastructure also in the metaphorical sense. And it also made me think several times in the 2 days on an experience I had this May when I for the first time traveled with friends of mine in an Egyptian village where I do my field work to the nearby provincial capital called Kafr Sheikh. Kafr Sheikh is a provincial town that is ugly and unseemingly and uninteresting, but people from the province have to go there regularly to do any paperwork, to get medical treatment, to go to university, to do practically all kinds of formal stuff that is related to government. From the village, it's a 2 hours ride. You get to actually Alexandria, which is Egypt's second city, in an hour, to Cairo in 3 hours, and then to this city, which I think, unlike Bruges, is a real shithole. it takes you 2 hours one way, and took this trip with these friends of mine, and they hate it. It has countless traffic hindrances, which are made by private people, so that cars don't drive so fast, so the minibus is constantly stopping and going. And it's a trip which you never do in order to do anything nice. It's a trip when you do because you're sick, because you have a lawsuit with somebody, because you have to because this or that. And it is a form of mobility that for these people who undertake this route has very little to do with the power to act, with the capacity to act. It is not a positive mobility. It's a form of movement that very often more is related to a sense of being stuck because you don't get a job in Gulf States, you didn't manage to make career in Cairo, you didn't manage to get to Europe, and there you are between your village and this dirty provincial capital. And yet it's constant movement. This is a kind of commuting that characterizes, I think, the world worldwide. And Egypt is one of those places which, thanks to subsidized fuel, has millions of people moving from one town to another constantly. So, and the unpleasant experience of this kind of mobility was constantly back in my head when I was observing at the same time how, in the course of these 2 days, and maybe that's just my sort of sensibility also for this topic, the issue of the power to do something, the power to act, came up constantly with the power to move. In a world where visa regimes turn capacity to travel into a class distinction, it's evident. Migration, mobility, social mobility, aspiration were constantly linked together. And at the same time, we had several observations that pointed out that it's not simply about linear movement from a past to a sort of ever better future. As Marta put it in her presentation, there are forms of migration that are about making a same life possible that for some reason is not possible, not available unless one moves around. And we had today a few references to normality as something which is not simply given, but which is actually a utopia. And so this linkage between movement or mobility and the capacity to do something, the power and the privilege, which then constantly renders immobility as something unpleasant and negative, even if in practice it might not be, puts me sort of to think about something to which I shall come back in a minute, which is the sort of, a tragic aspect of a sort of idea of transformation. There is a, how can I put it, movement and mobility comes with the idea of improvement, or at least safeguarding something, of keeping something. It's movement seems to be so often about striving for something, the attempt to reach something. And it becomes then more difficult to communicate the issues of what this movement actually results in, the discontents, the problematics of this. I think Messages of Paradise was addressing this problem of the enormous wishes, hopes, and strivings linked with the possibility to move and travel with the world actually at the same time come with problematic experiences that become difficult to communicate. And but I mean, this was perhaps something that was closer to my own work, but I thought so at the same time some... Then what I really was very, very positively impressed, what I really liked was the way the panel on mediation brought together the ephemeral media and the very solid stuff, which really in an age where it's so easy to fetishize the virtual, was very refreshing. And and again, at the same time, linked to the issue of aspiration, because how mediation at the same time is not just, it's also about rendering a place knowable, rendering a place desirable, how things brought back from Palestine, how things brought from Portugal, how images sent actually makes certain things knowable and desirable, and at the same time give this promise that one ought to have a share in these things. However, I found it interesting that it actually took us a day in the course of these discussions to actually explicitly address the elephant in the room, which was constantly there, which is the refugee crisis, which is so much about this issue of people who are on the move because it is not possible to have life as they knew it, and because at the same time there's a desire of having a good life, a better life, a normal life somewhere else. A crisis which I think by now is not even accurate to call it a crisis anymore. Maybe it is a refugee normality. And that at the same time also brought more and more the issue of power into the discussion, which in the beginning I was wondering, when do we start to talk about power? Well, then regimes came in, and then after regimes we got into moral, political, bureaucratic powers. And there things seemed to start to sort of fit into place. And I was observing today morning as with three parallel lines that for me all talk about the issue of power in the widest sense. One was spirituality. Pentecostal spirituality as an example of how some spiritualities seem to be so good in providing a guide life to live a life in the global age of movement and migration. I mean, we see certain types of spiritualities worldwide in different religious traditions becoming really powerful. I don't have an answer, but there is a link. There's a very strong link why, for example, Pentecostal Christianity and Evangelical Christianity is being so enormously successful. What I was already mentioned was this desire for elsewhere, for utopian normality. And as a third line became the issue which of coercion and violence, of evil, and in a way the ethics of that evil, if you want to say. that is part of structuring the world in such a place that movement becomes a privilege. Structuring this world in such a way that that humans experience a sort of alienation to which it seems to be very attractive and necessary to find certain kinds of spiritual answers. And so when we come to the issue of what the concept that was mentioned previously, motility, the very capacity to be mobile, and then themes that came linked with it, such as choice, such as desire, I was thinking about about the compelling powers that actually structure our desire, that structure our very capacity of being mobile, to give us conceivable ways of having power. Being a migrant in many parts of the world today is one of the most conceivable ways of having ability to do something about one's lives. Joining a transnational religious movement becomes, in these conditions, one of the most convincing, conceivable ways of having a sense of community and a sense of moral foundation in that world. So what does it mean anyway to choose? And I had the questionable honor to demonstrate in Daniela's films, one of the most most practical means of choice in the world is an EU passport, which provides you, which is a sort of perfect case of a privilege which one might earn and which one might get by good chance. It becomes a vehicle. The passport is a vehicle of mobility and choice, more valuable than much else. And yet also with the EU passport, choice is actually a very problematic concept if you think about it thoroughly, because such liberal choice of doing whatever you want is not possible, as we saw in the presentation about tourism, where coming to Lisbon, it's actually very unlikely that one could simply come to Lisbon and see Lisbon in whichever way one likes. One is dependent on guides, on guidebooks, on tram lines, on all kinds of narrative frameworks that offer us intelligible desire and certain kinds of experience. And I think nothing else could embody that kind of guided choice of mobility better than the private car. And I find it interesting that we didn't have actually a presentation on the private car. Anthropology is still a long way ahead towards the private car. We had taxis, which I myself prefer to private cars. I found it very interesting and good that we had vehicles at the very end of the 2 days, because vehicles provide, and the plentiful different ways of vehicles we had in the three presentations provides us interesting techniques of navigating one's way, not just through the city, but also through the world, and providing a very specific embodied experience and very specific range of ways to move, which I think also sort of show how Tim Ingold's transport versus wayfaring is really terribly romantic. It's really like, I find it's like Tolkien-like anti-modern romanticism in it. No matter how much I like walking myself, still. I mean, when I think back about the minibus ride to Kafr Sheikh, and I think about Ingold's wayfaring, I think, from the point of view of the person taking the minibus, the culmination of individual freedom and dignity is having to avoid this trip altogether. If you can't avoid it, do it in your private car. It is very easy to criticize that desire from a sort of middle-class European perspective, but when you have to take that ride in that bloody minibus, it makes really, really good sense. And which of course the proliferation of the private car also shows how, you know, the car, then you can travel to places where the car can take you, and shows that this also brings us to the problem of sustainability. Thinking about such a congested place like Northern Egypt, which has tens of millions of people living on an area that is maybe 200 kilometers across. And imagining the amount of congestion that is already there and comparing, extrapolating it in the process of expansional growth of a capitalist economy that provides the citizens that which capitalism can provide, which is gratification by goods that help you to move socially, move from one place to place. And which leaves me with a final observation of a certain gap we had, because the program title had embodiment, which we had in a very convincing way, which was a very inspiring way. We had ephemeres in a very inspiring way, often more solid than I thought. And we had ecologies. But what about the ecologies? Because we live in a world where movement is a value, I think, partly because our entire economy is structured on expensive movement, is structured based on growth. All the good things that we have, we largely have them because we have a growing economy that makes it possible to have a politics of a distribution that you could not have in a stable economy. But growth is a dynamic expansion. It's an unstable state. It's an unecological state, not just in, this, you know, in a classical sense about what it does to nature, but in the sense that ecology, if anybody knows biology better than me, please correct me, but if I understand that ecology is understood as a system of reciprocal balance of a number of different actors and different forces. Expansive growth is not a reciprocal balance. It's a fundamentally unstable state. And in such an unstable state, movement is essentially good. And immobility becomes difficult to address. We've spoken about immobility many times, but it's always, there is a certain unease, I feel, to talk actually addressing of what we mean immobility. And I have no answers to that, but I think it seems that the theme of movement in the world where we live makes, at the same time, it problematizes the question of ecology. Could we imagine a traffic ecology? I don't know. Anyway, I'm out of time, so I think we can continue here with discussion and drinks, and thank you very much, everybody, again.